Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Thursday, September 19th, 2019. Coming up this hour,
the Fed cuts rates but falls short of expectations on future policy.
I'm disappointed by what the Fed has come out with here.
I think the Fed is not as accommodative as I'd like it to be.
It's been characterized as an insurance cut. I think this was the second payment on an insurance policy.
Canadian Prime Minister Trudeau is under fire following a photo showing him in brown face. Plus, Secretary of State Pompeo calls an attack on a Saudi oil facility an act of war. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Yankees lost to the Angels. The Mets rallied to win at Colorado, and Eli Manning reacted to being demoted as starting quarterback for the Giants.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by Interactive Brokers. Clients can earn 1.63% on idle cash in their brokerage account. Restrictions apply. Visit IBKR.com/YIB to learn more.
And U.S. futures are lower. It is 6:01 on Wall Street, and we check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures down 7 points, Dow futures down 64, NASDAQ futures down 30. The DAX in Germany is up 0.2%. 10-year Treasury up 0.2%. Yield 1.78%. Yield on the 2-year, 1.76%. NYMEX crude oil up 1.5% or 84 cents at $58.95 a barrel. COMEX gold is down 0.8% or $11.30 at $15.04.50 an ounce. The euro 1.1060 against the dollar. The yen 108.01. Nathan.
Thanks, Karen. We begin with the Federal Reserve cutting rates as expected, and Chairman Jerome Powell saying moderate policy moves should be enough to sustain the U.S. expansion. At the same time, though, he made it clear the central bank doesn't plan deep rate cuts.
If the economy does turn down, then a more extensive sequence of rate cuts could be appropriate. We don't see that. It's not what we expect. But we would certainly follow that path if it became appropriate.
Chairman Powell also faced questions about this week's spike in overnight money market rates, saying the Fed will keep injecting cash into the system to get markets back on track.
We don't see this as having any implications for the broader economy or for the economic outlook, nor for our ability to control rates. The strains in the money markets reflect forces that we saw coming, and they just had a bigger effect than I think most folks anticipated.
The New York Fed plans another cash injection this morning, offering up $75 billion in an overnight repurchase agreement operation.
Well, the Fed's rate cut was expected. Its forecasts show officials split over the path of policy this year. Five didn't want to move. Five see another quarter point cut on the way. And seven see 50 basis points of easing needed by year end. It's a more hawkish forecast than expected by Guggenheim Chief Investment Officer Scott Minard.
I'm disappointed by what the Fed has come out with here because the market is priced for substantially more action. And so the fact that the Fed is sort of disappointing based on market expectation, I'm surprised that we're not seeing more of a response to this.
The initial response saw the S&P 500 fall about 20 points, though it soon rebounded to finish the day little changed. Former Minneapolis Fed President Narayana Kotralakota also expected a more dovish forecast from the central bank.
I think the Fed is not as accommodative as I'd like it to be, simply because my inflation forecast is running below 2% over the next 3 years. So I think there's more room for accommodation.
But former Atlanta Fed President Dennis Lockhart sees this move as consistent with Chairman Powell's call for a mid-cycle adjustment.
It's been characterized as risk management, as an insurance cut. I think this was the second payment on an insurance policy.
President Trump also weighed in on the Fed decision, saying, quote, Jay Powell and the Federal Reserve fail again. No guts, no sense, no vision.
And we also had a policy decision from the Bank of Japan overnight. The BOJ kept rates on hold, opting instead to review its assessment of prices and the economy at its next meeting in October. We get more from Bloomberg Economics and Policy Editor Kathleen Hayes.
Now the big question will be, is the Bank of Japan setting us up for some kind of move, a move towards negative rates? Many people expect that. And I think the big question is, yes, is there some fundamental acknowledgement that if the global economy keeps weakening, if all these pressures continue to weigh on the global economy and Japan, that maybe they do have to do something more?
Governor Haruhiko Kuroda says the BOJ has become more likely to add stimulus than it was at its last meeting, but there's no need for major changes for now. The yen strengthened following the decision. It's currently trading at 108.02.
The Swiss National Bank also kept interest rates on hold, leaving its deposit rate at minus 0.75%. The central bank's statement was also little changed, though it did highlight the fragile state of markets and repeated a pledge to intervene if needed.
Norway's central bank broke away from the pack, delivering its fourth interest rate hike in a year. Norges Bank raised its benchmark rate to 1.5%, the highest level in nearly 5 years. Most forecasters had not predicted the move.
Up next, we get a decision from the Bank of England, where policymakers look likely to sit out the current wave of global easing. Bloomberg's Lucy Meakin brings us more from London.
The BOE's nine policymakers will vote to keep interest rates unchanged at 0.75%, according to all 63 economists in a Bloomberg survey. While Brexit uncertainty in the UK remains heightened, the central bank still has to take the government's policy of leaving with a deal as a given. That means its assumptions exclude the risk of a no-deal exit next month. In London, Lucy Meakin, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Lucy, thanks. The decisions from the Fed and BOJ were front and center in Asia today. Stocks there finished the session on uneven footing. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us from Singapore with a recap. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. Hong Kong stocks were the biggest drag as the Hong Kong Monetary Authority cut its benchmark interest rate in line with the Fed. China's yuan dropped as traders took stock of the odds for the PBOC to lower borrowing costs. In Tokyo, the yen climbed the most in a month and Japanese stocks paired earlier gains. The Nikkei 225 added 0.4% to 22,044 points. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Julia, thank you. On the economic front, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development is cutting its forecast for global growth. It says the global economy will grow this year at the slowest pace since the financial crisis, cutting the forecast it made just 4 months ago. The OECD expects global growth of 2.9%. That's down from its last estimate of 3.2%.
Corporate news now. Shares of Microsoft are up about 1% in early trading. The company announced a $40 billion buyback program and boosted its dividend by 5 cents.
Shares of U.S. Steel down 10% in the pre-market. The company expects to report a wider loss than predicted by analysts, making it the third American steelmaker in 3 days to warn on their outlook. And futures this morning are lower. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news, and this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thank you. 6:07 on Wall Street now. Here's Michael Barr with a check of what's happening around the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Nathan. Justin Trudeau's re-election bid was dealt a serious blow after the Canadian Prime Minister was forced to apologize for wearing brown face makeup at an Arabian Nights theme party in 2001. Trudeau says it was racist and a dumb thing to do.
I shouldn't have done that. I should have known better, but I didn't. And I'm really sorry.
The photo of Trudeau, first published by Time magazine, appeared in the yearbook of West Point Grey Academy, the private school in Vancouver where the leader once taught. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says that America backs Saudi Arabia's right to defend itself after a weekend attack targeted the heart of its oil industry, calling it an act of war. Pompeo says the U.S. blames Iran for Saturday's attack.
The equipment used is unknown to be in the Houthi arsenal. So we watched clearly and have a deep understanding of what the Iranians have transferred to the Houthis.
Pompeo's comments came as he was in Saudi Arabia after meeting with the kingdom's crown prince Mohammed bin Salman. Meanwhile, President Trump says he wants tougher sanctions on Iran. President Trump concluded a three-day Western trip by visiting a section of border wall near San Diego that's being replaced. Trump hailed the new design as featuring what he called a world-class security system that will be virtually impenetrable.
For many years, people have wanted the proper wall, and we have a wall that the likes of which very few places have ever seen.
The president also praised the Mexican government, which he said has sent tens of thousands of troops to its northern and southern borders to help slow the flow of migrants heading toward the U.S. The president's visit to California comes as he said he will revoke the state's authority to regulate greenhouse gas emissions from autos. The American Airlines mechanic charged with tampering with a plane's navigation system in mid-July has been denied bail in Miami. Prosecutors say he had an ISIS propaganda video on his phone. Despite heavy rainfall from Tropical Depression Imelda, officials in southeast Texas say so far there are no reports of flooded homes or people stranded. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thank you. 6:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Here's John Stashower.
Nathan, Yankee fans have been waiting 7 years for a division title. I'll have to wait one more night at the stadium. CC Sabathia on the mound. Final home regular season start of his career. The Yanks lost to the Angels 3-2. And then, with the champagne still ready to be popped open, they stuck around to see if Tampa Bay lost to the Dodgers in L.A. That game started early, 8 o'clock, but it went late. The Rays rallied, tied the game in the ninth inning, and then 3 hours after the Yankee game ended, the Rays won in 11. So the Yankee magic number still won. Another chance tonight. The bubbly ready to go. Houston won. The Astros are now one game ahead of the Yanks for best record. The Mets rallied in Denver. A four-run ninth inning. Beat the Rockies 7-4. Pete Alonso homered again. His 49th. He leads the majors. Needs three more to catch Aaron Judge for most ever by a rookie. The Cubs and Brewers tied for that last playoff spot. Both lost. Mets are three games behind. They have to overtake both teams. Only 11 games left. As expected, Eli Manning took the high road the day after he lost the job. He's held for 16 seasons. No longer Giants starting quarterback. He's now the backup to Daniel Jones.
No other option but just to handle it and do my job, support my teammates, support the Giants, and do what I can do to try to help go into football games. And right now that's getting Daniel and helping him and supporting him.
Much discussion about whether Eli will get to the Hall of Fame. He's top eight all-time in completions, yards, and touchdowns, but his regular season record is .500. Jones of the Giants play Sunday at Tampa Bay. Jets, big underdog at New England. Linebacker C.J. Mosley is still not practicing. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
Okay, John, thanks. And Bloomberg News has learned the Los Angeles Dodgers have completed the sale of a minority stake in the team. The size of the stake and the buyer have not been disclosed. Forbes says the Dodgers are worth $3.3 billion. That compares to the Yankees' estimated value of $4.6 billion. S&P futures are lower by 5.5 points right now. Dow futures down 51, and NASDAQ futures are down almost 25 points. You're listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. Sports was brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Let Burden create innovative tax solutions to benefit your family and your business. Visit burdenllp.com. Burden Accountants and Advisors, they listen, they solve, they do.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. It is 6:17 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Daybreak is out on customer terminals, bringing you all the news you need to start your day. Brought to you by IBKR and CME Group. The new micro e-mini futures contracts are available at IBKR at the lowest commissions. Learn more at IBKR.com/CME Mini. Now let's check the latest headlines with Ainsley Thompson in the Bloomberg Daybreak desk. Ainsley, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. The Fed cut rates, but officials are split over the path of policy this year. Five didn't want to move, five see another quarter point cut on the way, and seven see 50 basis points of easing needed by year end. Meanwhile, the Fed injected cash into the money market for a third day to prevent rates spiking again. It will offer up to $75 billion in an overnight repo operation. Norway's central bank remains the last hawk standing, with its fourth rate hike in a year. It raised the key rate 25 basis points to 1.5%, but signalled more tightening is unlikely. And on the M&A front, Datadog rebuffed a more than $7 billion offer from Cisco in recent weeks. That's according to sources who say the company will instead press ahead with plans for an IPO. For all the news you need to start your day, check out Daybreak on your mobile phone on the Bloomberg Anywhere app. Karen.
All right, Ainsley, thank you. S&P futures down 6 points, Dow futures down 57, NASDAQ futures down 27. The DAX in Germany is up 0.2%, 10-year Treasury up 3/32, yield 1.78%, yield on the 2-year 1.75%. NYMEX crude oil up 1.6% or 94 cents at $59.05 a barrel, and COMEX gold is down 0.8% or $12.10 at $15.0370 an ounce. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo is in the Middle East meeting with leaders to discuss last weekend's attack on Saudi oil installations. He met with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman and called the strike on key oil facilities an act of war. The U.S. blames Iran for the attack. There are calls for Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau to step down following the publication of a yearbook photo showing him in brown face makeup dressed as Aladdin at a costume party in 2001. In baseball, the Yankees lost. The Mets won along with the A's. The Giants beat the Red Sox. The Nationals and Orioles lost. Week 3 of the NFL begins tonight with the Titans at the Jaguars. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok, on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thank you. It is 6:20 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Commerce Bank Global Equities economist Peter Dixon joins us this morning with Central Banks in Focus. Peter, good morning. I'd love to get your take this morning on the Fed's move. We got the rate cut that the market was expecting, but now some dissent in the committee on whether they should have cut at all or whether it was enough.
Morning. Yeah, I mean, I think the Fed probably had little choice other than to cut rates. It had signaled, I think, that this was a likely move. But I think the dissent can also be seen as potentially a signal as to, you know, what might happen next. It just sows sufficient uncertainty, I think, to give the markets an edge and to highlight that, you know, the next move may not be imminent. But as it happens, I mean, I think the Fed will continue cutting. Really, the issue now is the timing. I've placed a significant amount of preventative monetary easing.
When you have the OECD slashing its growth forecast just this morning, does that point to potentially a quicker move on the Fed's part, or is the U.S. economy still bolstered enough compared to the rest of the world?
Yeah, I mean, I look at the U.S. and look at it and say, well, you know, it is slowing a bit, sure, but it seems pretty robust to me, and I think under those circumstances, the Fed can afford to, you know, wait a little bit. You know, it may go next month. It may wait until December. You know, and I think we're at the stage now that the Fed has already signaled intention. And as a consequence, you know, the timing is perhaps less important than the actual direction of travel. But, you know, as you said, there is clearly a sense that growth in many parts of the world is beginning to slow. We saw the ECB reacting last week by, you know, easing monetary policy still further. We've got the Asian central banks reviewing what they're going to do. So clearly, central banks are going to be forced to respond if this slowdown materializes or if it comes in even worse than the OECD anticipates.
What do you see as the most important factor for the Fed to consider as it charts its rate path?
I mean, I think it's the growth outlook, really. I mean, clearly, you know, it is slowing. It's not posting the step growth that we saw in 2018. But I think we have to bear in mind, of course, that last year's numbers were inflated by the tax cuts and some sort of rebound or normalization, rather, was always likely. But I think if the economy continues to trundle along on its current path, then it can afford to be cautious with regard to monetary easing. But if we start to see signs of a more protracted slowdown, then, you know, the timing of those rate cuts could be brought forward.
Do you feel like the Fed is doing enough at this point to address the liquidity crunch that we've seen this week in overnight lending with the repo moves this week?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is. I mean, the Fed has responded. You know, it's pushed the rate down towards the bottom end of the corridor. It clearly recognizes the problem, which I think is a good thing, because, you know, sometimes central banks can be accused of ignoring market concerns in that regard. So yes, I think the Fed has acted, and of course, given that the Fed meets, you know, every 6 to 8 weeks or thereabouts, it won't be long before it can act again and review this decision. And of course, if things get really tough, it has a history of acting between meetings. So yeah, I think the Fed's on top of this one.
Okay, so in about 30 seconds here, how do you advise investors to position as the Fed sort of takes this wait-and-see approach?
Well, I mean, I think it still will pay to be involved in equities at this stage of the cycle because, you know, central banks are cutting interest rates. Generally, that's a positive environment for equities. So long as the economy is holding up, you know, equity investors probably have a little bit more juice out of this one. And that's basically the alternative is to buy fixed income securities where yields, you know, look really, really terrible. So, you know, I'm still moderately optimistic with regard to the equity environment right now.
Peter Dixon, good to talk with you. Peter Dixon is global equities economist at Commerce Bank. And this morning, after the Fed rate decision, futures are pointing to a slightly lower open this morning, with S&P futures off by 6.5 points at the moment, Dow futures down 62 points, and NASDAQ futures are lower by almost 28 points. The 10-year is up 2/32 seconds now, yield 1.78%, 2-year Treasury yield 1.76%. You are listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. And it's 6:25 on Wall Street. Straight ahead, we'll look ahead to the Bank of England decision as central banks remain in focus, plus a fuller check of the markets and all the latest in business, economics, and finance on Bloomberg Daybreak.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Futures are lower this morning following the Fed's latest rate cut, and after Chairman Jerome Powell said moderate policy moves should be sufficient to sustain the U.S. expansion.
If the economy does turn down, then a more extensive sequence of rate cuts could be appropriate. We don't see that. It's not what we expect, but we would certainly follow that path if it became appropriate.
Forecasts from the Fed show officials split over the path of policy this year. 5 didn't want to move. 5 see another quarter point cut on the way. 7 see 50 basis points of easing needed by year end. It's a more hawkish forecast than expected by Guggenheim Chief Investment Officer Scott Minard.
The market's priced for another rate cut. The fact that the Fed is sort of signaling it doesn't intend to deliver, it's really kind of surprising that we're just sitting here.
And the Fed's next decision comes October 30th.
The Bank of Japan has stopped short of following the Fed, choosing to leave policy unchanged. We get more from Bloomberg's Paul Jackson in Tokyo.
The BOJ said it needed to pay closer attention to the possibility it might be losing momentum toward its 2% inflation target as economies overseas continue to decelerate. While about three-quarters of economists surveyed by Bloomberg had predicted the BOJ would leave policy on hold today, almost half of them expected the central bank to ease policy either this month or in October. The call for a review in October is likely to heighten expectations that the BOJ will take additional action then. In Tokyo, Paul Jackson, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Paul. The Swiss National Bank held its policy and deposit rate at minus 0.75%. The SNB also reiterated its currency intervention pledge, saying the franc is highly valued.
The Bank of England is forecast to keep interest rates unchanged today, while Norway's central bank broke away from the pact, delivering its fourth interest rate hike in a year.
On the corporate front, Microsoft shares are up 1% in early trading. The company announced a new $40 billion buyback program and boosted its quarterly dividend by 5 cents.
And shares of U.S. Steel are down 10%. The company is the third American steelmaker in 3 days to warn on its profit outlook. Now let's get you up to date on how stocks are faring. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures, they're down about 7 points. Dow futures down 61. NASDAQ futures down 28. The DAX in Germany's up 0.2%. 10-year Treasury up 2/32 seconds. Yield 1.78%. Yield on the 2-year 1.76%. And NYMEX crude oil is up 2%, up $1.15 to $59.26 a barrel. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thanks. It's 6:33 on Wall Street, and the news update is brought to you by National Realty. NRIA, developers of high-return income-producing properties for investor partners. See them at NRIA.net. Here's Michael Barr.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Canadian leader Justin Trudeau's campaign is working to contain a growing scandal following the publication of a yearbook photo showing him in brown face makeup at a 2001 costume party. The Prime Minister apologized and begged Canadians to forgive him.
It was something that I didn't think was racist at the time, but now I recognize it was something racist to do.
The photo was taken from the yearbook from the West Point Grey Academy in Vancouver, where Trudeau worked as a teacher. The whistleblower complaint that set off a showdown between the U.S. intelligence community and Congress involves President Trump's communications with a foreign leader. The Washington Post reports that's according to two former U.S. officials familiar with the matter. According to the officials, President Trump's interaction with the foreign leader included a promise that was regarded as so troubling that it prompted an official in the U.S. intelligence community to file a formal whistleblower complaint with the Inspector General for the intelligence community. The rhetoric is heating up in the wake of the weekend strike on Saudi oil facilities. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo in the region calls it an act of war. Iran denies involvement. Meanwhile, Yemen's rebels maintain they did it. It comes as President Trump announced new stiff sanctions on Iran, but stopped short of a military response.
There are many options, and there's the ultimate option, and there are options a lot less than that, and we'll see. We're in a very powerful position.
Legislation that threatens Hong Kong's special trading status is moving through the U.S. legislature. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says it is bipartisan, and support has been fueled as she invited in several pro-democracy Hong Kong protesters. One was Denise Ho.
It is not only the young people, but really everyone who believes in these universal values and who want to protect our city from the erosion of our democracy.
She says the U.S. should worry about the move against democracies around the world. Pelosi says it will pass.
The bill is bipartisan, just as the Congress's commitment to the people of Hong Kong is.
Along with threatening Hong Kong's special trading status, it calls for annual assessment of whether the city is sufficiently autonomous from Beijing to receive special treatment. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. Coming up to 6:36 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, brought to you by Burton Accountants and Advisors. Here's John Stash Hour.
Nathan, the Yankees were going for their 100th win of the season, their first division title since 2012. They trailed the Angels 2-0, tied the game on an Aaron Judge home run, but a throwing error by Adam Ottavino in the sixth inning. The Yanks had only six hits. They lost 3-2. They did get Giancarlo Stanton back in the lineup, played left field, went 1-for-3, only the 10th game Stanton has played in this season, but he's getting ready for the postseason.
You just got to lock it in and go with what you know. And, you know, if it's going to take a little bit of time, it will. But it'll be back and forth for a little while. And I got a week and a half to figure it out.
Still could have clinched the division had Tampa Bay lost to the Dodgers. But the Rays, who are fighting for a wild card, won 8-7 in 11 innings. They tied that game in the ninth. The Yankees stayed around to watch. They would have popped open the champagne had the Rays lost. Tampa Bay's off tonight, so only one way to clinch. That's a Yankee victory. In Denver, Mets got another Pete Alonso home run, his 49th, but they went to the ninth inning trailing 4-3. They scored four times. They beat the Rockies 7-4. Seth Lugo got the win, also a hit in that ninth inning. For what it's worth, the Mets gained on the Cubs and Brewers. They both lost. They stay tied for that last wild card. The Mets are three games behind. Daniel Jones got the call Tuesday at age 22. Just three games into his rookie NFL season, Jones told he's now the starting quarterback for the Giants.
You never really know when something like this is going to happen, and my job is, you know, is to be ready and to continue to improve. And, you know, I feel like I've been able to do that. Like I said, you don't know when something like this can happen. I can't control that. So just trying to be prepared, and we'll continue to prepare, obviously, the same way this week.
With Eli Manning now as his backup Sunday at Tampa Bay with a Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. I'm John Stanchel.
All right, thanks, John. 6:37 on Wall Street, and just under 2 hours from now, we get data on jobless claims. Economists say they likely rose to 213,000 last week. Here with more is Bloomberg's Vinny Del Giudice.
In the prior week, jobless claims fell to 204,000, just shy of a half-century low set in April. Bloomberg Economics says today's data could fluctuate in the aftermath of Hurricane Dorian. Aside from the weather, this year's weekly reports point to a durable labor market. The high watermark since the start of the year, 244,000 in January. The high watermark during the Great Recession, 665,000 in March 2009. Vinny Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Vinny. 6:38 on Wall Street.
The following is an editorial from Bloomberg Opinion.
This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. In the nation's capital, Republican lawmakers continue to block vital gun safety legislation. In the states, fortunately, it's a very different story. Legislatures across the country have recently passed gun safety laws, banning semi-automatic rifles in Connecticut, for example, and requiring background checks on ammunition sales in California. Yet Yet one problem with these initiatives is obvious. Guns can be moved across state lines. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy has taken a big step toward addressing this with an executive order requiring firearm manufacturers and retailers who do business with the state, wherever they are located, to disclose whether they meet New Jersey's safety standards. The Garden State spends millions to arm its law enforcement authorities by using its purchasing power to raise standards in other states as well. New Jersey has opened a promising new path to saving lives. This editorial was written by the Bloomberg Editorial Board. For more Bloomberg Opinion, visit Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg Terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
You can hear Bloomberg Opinion editorials every weekday at this time. 6:39 on Wall Street, time for the Bloomberg Green Report. Here's Bob Moon.
It is a literal smokescreen from President Trump as California's Democratic governor sees it, and Gavin Newsom sought to clear the air, so to speak, about what's really behind Trump's determination to roll back fuel economy standards. Newsom spoke soon after the president announced he'll revoke California's authority to set stricter auto pollution limits. That waiver has been used for 50 years against California's once notorious smog. But Trump claims it's a burden for carmakers, that getting rid of it will lower production costs, spur demand, and create, as Trump tweeted, significantly more jobs, jobs, jobs. Newsom says, don't believe it. Trump's really just trying to prop up the use of obsolete fossil fuel.
It's about the oil industry, period, full stop. It's not about the car manufacturers, not about consumers. It's not about the health. It's not about our economy. It's about oil companies.
Newsom says carmakers support California's role in setting pollution standards. They fear a long court fight will plunge the industry into legal limbo. That's the Bloomberg Green Business Report. I'm Bob Moon.
Thank you, Bob. This is Bloomberg. And coming up, the Bloomberg Morning Call, brought to you by Audi. Don't let someone else drive off in the Audi model you've always wanted. Visit a tri-state Audi dealer to get behind the wheel of yours today.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Futures moving lower this morning. We go to the first word, breaking news desk, for today's morning call. Here's Bill Maloney. Bill, good morning.
And good morning, Karen. That's right. U.S. futures are under pressure right now. Dow futures down 70 points. S&P's dropped 7.5. And Nasdaq futures declined by 32. The U.S. 10-year yield at 1.79%. Gold is little changed. And Hong Kong fell 1% overnight, while European markets are trading higher, led by gains in Italy and Spain. Back in the U.S. on the economic front at 8:30, current account balance, Philly Fed and initial jobs claims. And at 10 o'clock, the leading index and existing home sales. After the bell last night, Microsoft announced they are buying back $40 billion in stock and boosted the dividend. And in deal news, people familiar said that Datadog rebuffed a $7 billion plus offer from Cisco in recent weeks. In other news, Target is buying back $5 billion, and U.S. Steel Q3 adjusted EBITDA view missed the lowest estimates. Wrapping things up, Costco is downgraded to underperform at Bernstein, Hyatt upgraded to buy at Goldman Sachs, and Twilio is upgraded to overweight over at Morgan Stanley. Live from the First Breaking News Desk, I'm Bill Maloney. Karen?
All right, Bill, thank you. And to hear live breaking news over your Bloomberg, type squawk on your terminal, S-Q-U-A-W-K. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, the whistleblower complaint that triggered a showdown between the U.S. intelligence community and Congress involves President Trump's communications with a foreign leader. That's according to the Washington Post. The acting director of national intelligence has agreed to testify before the House Intelligence Committee. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has apologized after admitting that in 2001 he was photographed in brown face makeup wearing a turban at a costume party. In baseball, the Yankees lost to the Angels. The Pinstripes' magic number to make the playoffs remains at 1. The Mets won and keep their playoff hopes alive. The A's won to stay 2 games ahead of the Rays for an AL wild card spot. The Giants beat the Red Sox 11-3. The Nationals and Orioles lost. Week 3 of the NFL begins tonight with the Titans at the Jaguars. Finally, from Daybreak on the Bloomberg, forest debris as airplane fuel. Delta is investing $2 million with Northwest Advanced Biofuels to study the feasibility of turning branches and twigs into jet fuel. The project may provide about 10% of Delta's annual consumption on the West Coast. Nathan, it's about 20% of the way toward its goal of cutting carbon emissions by 50%
by 2050.
All right, I'm going to try to steer clear of making any jokes about losing the forest for the trees here, but I'm thinking that's a lot of branches and twigs if you're talking about jet fuel, Michael.
Well, in the flight business, that's what they call controlling the stick. Global news, 24 hours a day.
I'm not touching that.
What do you expect? I'm a dad. Global on air and at TikTok on Twitter, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. Don't judge me. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, we're going to get Kathleen Hunter to get us out of here. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios, where it's 6:50 on Wall Street. It is time to check what's going on in D.C. The top stories in our nation's capital include President Trump calling the border wall a world-class security system as he signed a chunk of wall during a visit to San Diego. Attorney General William Barr floating expanded background checks for gun purchases as a possible measure on Capitol Hill. And intelligence officials agreeing now to meet with House lawmakers after a mysterious whistleblower complaint. Also making news this morning, the president weighing his options after last weekend's oil facility attacks in Saudi Arabia. Let's bring in Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter now. We just got this word from Iran's foreign minister Javad Zarif, Kate, warning any U.S. or Saudi strike on Iran would result in all-out war. That's according to CNN. And this is, of course, after Secretary of State Pompeo called the attack on the Aramco facilities an act of war. Where does this leave the president?
Well, the rhetoric is certainly escalating, and it's been this ongoing question for the past couple days, ever since Trump, you know, kind of opened this Pandora's box when he tweeted Sunday that the U.S. was locked and loaded and ready to make any kind of a response necessary to the attack on the Saudi oil facility. And so I think that now we're seeing this escalation in rhetoric in both sides, and it's concerning because we're also seeing some other signs that despite the fact that, you know, the Trump administration is still talking about wanting to take a diplomatic route, there are some troubling indications, specifically the fact that it looks as though now the possibility of Trump sitting down with Iran's President Hassan Rouhani at the General Assembly in the United Nations next week in New York is now off the table. And so I think that right now what we're seeing is only rhetoric, and it's important to stress that. But I think it's certainly concerning rhetoric, and there are some behind the scenes developments that are equally concerning.
You talk about the locked and loaded tweet from days ago. There's been some indication that perhaps the president might have been talking about being locked and loaded in terms of, you know, putting more sanctions pressure on Iran, especially yesterday when he tweeted that he's requested substantial new sanctions against Iran. I mean, could it end there?
It certainly could. And I think there was a real sense yesterday when Trump, you know, announced those sanctions again via Twitter that perhaps that was an indication that the U.S. was not, in fact, looking towards a military response. And I think that there certainly are factors that would push Trump politically away from a military type of response. He's looking at re-election about a year from now. And, you know, he campaigned hard in 2016 on taking the U.S. out of foreign wars. And so I think that, or ending U.S. involvement in foreign conflict. So the idea of starting up military action against Iran right now certainly has a strong political downside for Trump. And so I think the fact that they've moved ahead with sanctions may be an indication that, at least for now, military action is not the route they're looking to pursue.
And up to now, Secretary of State Pompeo had said that he's focused on building a coalition to increase the pressure on Iran. What has Europe's response to that been, particularly when it's seeming to be focused on trying to salvage the nuclear deal?
Yeah, I think it's a bit hard for the U.S. to come in now and say that they're looking to build a coalition on Iran, given that the U.S. essentially spiked the coalition that had been built in 2015 around the Iran nuclear deal. I don't think the rest of Europe is ready to abandon that deal yet. And so whether or not there's a place to kind of meet in the middle, it seems to me like a pretty big gap to, you know, to bridge. But I think that that's certainly what Mike Pompeo is talking about doing, and whether or not he's able to pull it off, I think remains to be seen.
In the time we have left here, I want to turn to a pretty interesting piece out this morning on the Bloomberg Terminal about President Trump's impact on the Republican Party, no matter what happens with next year's election. I mean, it has been hard to deny the shift we've seen in the GOP since the rise of Trump.
Absolutely. And on everything from free trade to immigration, the center of gravity for the Republican Party has certainly moved. It's not been necessarily that Trump has reflected the voters that are out there. It's in some ways the opposite. It's that he has kind of driven the Republican base further to the right, also driven Republicans in Congress further to the right. And there's no real reason to believe that there's going to be a reset there, at least not automatically once he leaves office.
At the same time, you've got now three primary challengers, at least, you know, nominally, trying to say the old GOP isn't done yet.
Yeah, that's true. And I certainly think there will be another, you know, there certainly will be other factions of the GOP or those that are resistant to Trump's new age version of the GOP. However, I think that the fact that those primary challengers have gained little, if any, traction, I think indicates that, you know, the center of gravity again is really truly shifted and that, you know, what is now considered Republican mainstream is Trumpism.
Bloomberg Washington reporter Kathleen Hunter, thank you. As always, encourage our listeners to seek out that piece on President Trump's lasting impact on the GOP and other stories on Bloomberg.com, and follow all the latest on Bloomberg Radio in Washington at Bloomberg 99.1 and 105.7 FM HD2. It is coming up to 6:56 on Wall Street.
The following commentary is from Bloomberg Opinion.
Don't pack the Supreme Court. Fix it. I'm Jonathan Bernstein, a columnist for Bloomberg Opinion. Liberals are talking about packing the Supreme Court by adding a couple of seats if Democrats win big in 2020 as revenge for the Republican theft of a high court seat in 2016. But instead of escalating constitutional hardball, Democrats could use the threat of court packing to win a compromise. One possibility? A constitutional amendment, fixing the number of justices at 9, each serving for a single 18-year term, staggered so that there'd be a vacancy every other year. That system would improve on the weirdly random nature of Supreme Court vacancies. It would reduce the hold of long-gone election results, and it would end the strong incentive to nominate very young justices. It might even minimize the vast importance placed on every confirmation fight. It's surely a lot better than increasing the size of the court and hurting its public image every time we get unified party government, which is where all of this is heading. That's a game that neither party wins. I'm Jonathan Bernstein. For more opinion, please go to Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg terminal.
This has been Bloomberg Opinion.
And you can hear Bloomberg Opinion commentaries every weekday at this time. Karen.
All right. Thanks, Nathan. S&P future is down 8 points this morning. Dow futures down 70. NASDAQ futures down 35. The DAX in Germany is up 0.1%. 10-year Treasury up 1/32nd. Yield 1.79%. Yield on the 2-year 1.76%. NYMEX crude oil is up 1.7% or 97 cents at $59.08 a barrel. And COMEX gold is down 0.7% on $10.20 to $15.0560 an ounce. The euro 1.1066 against the dollar. And Bloomberg Surveillance is straight ahead with Tom Keene and Jonathan Farrow. For Nathan Hager, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.